Susan Schmidt is with us for Managing Your Future, and that's sponsored by DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management. See what we did right there? Mm-hmm. And Ms. Schmidt works with Westwood Industrial Complex in Dallas, Texas, but also lives here in Chicago, and she's joining us right now from the great state of Texas. Now, I have just one question for you. What in the hell happened this week?
Yeah, big change. So this week we are still in the heart of earnings season. A lot of earnings reports came out last week and this week. And this week the market took a pause because the other big thing that happened was that we had a Fed meeting. And we didn't get a press conference after this Fed meeting. They just issued a statement. And there was a lot of, as always, speculation around what was going to be in that statement and what the market thinks the Fed is going to think about the economy. So I think that tempered everything. And we got a statement that was very neutral. It clearly indicates, as clear as the Fed can be, which is kind of clear like mud sometimes, mm-hmm. It does indicate that we're not going to get an interest rate increase in the near future. They're still looking at the health of the underlying economy, all very positive. And it was a steady as she goes. And the market doesn't know what to do with sort of a steady state environment. It's used to things going up, things going down, movement in one direction or another. So we're pausing here, if you will, and moving slowly through earnings, waiting to see what corporations are saying.
All right. Well, okay. That's all well and good. But what about this Apple situation? I mean, Apple's one of the most widely held stocks,
yeah,
right?
Apple is a market unto itself.
Right.
Apple came out with guidance that was below expectations. Now, Apple is still a very vibrant, profitable, well-run company, and it has a lot going for it. If you look around, you will notice that probably the most of the people you know have a smartphone, and many of them will have an iPhone. And so for Apple to actually bring in their growth and say, you know, maybe we've saturated the market, maybe there just aren't that many phones to sell, and for some reason caught the market by surprise. And so there is a little bit of an overreaction to that news, I feel, in everyone in the supply chain, because Apple's bringing growth down is a comment interpreted by the market as a comment on the rest of the world. If Apple's slowing growth, everything must be slowing. I don't necessarily believe that, but it's very reactionary. And as you said, Apple, extremely widely held. So a lot of people are just going, ooh, I don't know about that. Retail can have an influence here. So the retail investor is selling that stock as well, and that just pushes the price down.
Well, doesn't you think, Susie, there's a little bit of a perception for Apple, which is, you know, maybe the most identifiable brand in the world. But the last couple of years, you know, they haven't had that wow moment. I mean, you know, it's like, hey, here's another version of the iPhone 4. Here's yet another iPad. Here's the, you know, a lot of just improvements or modifications on already existing, you know, big time gadgets. And you also, I feel that like a lot of people, millennials in particular, feel like, oh, that's my mom's phone, the iPhone.
Right. That's old news now.
Oh, that is so, you know what? I hate you for saying that, Richard, because not only do I have an iPhone, I have an older iPhone. So I barely have my grandmother's iPhone, and she died.
Well, that's what I said about you. That's my mom's phone.
1991.
Specific to Roe,
yeah.
Who doesn't like to upgrade his technology. So I think, Richard, there's a lot to be said for that. So remember that Apple does have multiple generations, and people really discount and say, well, they came out with the watch, but it wasn't a big deal. Well, they actually sold as many watches as they sold iPhones when the iPhone first launched. But it gets lost in the noise because we're in so many iterations of this. And remember that Apple is a company, and its long history, which it does have, over the past decades, it has gone through periods where it's hard to come up with a brand new concept and device and introduce it to society every few years, but they do manage to do that, you know, sort of every, say, decade plus. If we went back pre-iPhone introduction, there was no concept of that product whatsoever. No one really even thought a phone, you know, we all had clamshells. We didn't really think a phone could do all of that. So I would say don't discount the talent and the creativity of Apple. We may see iterations of similar products or products you're used to, but I do believe that that is a creative team and a management team that can produce the wow factor. It's just hard to time that.
Well, apparently, for me, because, I mean...
Well, you can be wowed by, you know, your grandmother's phone. So, low bar.
Wow, but it updates itself. What do I need to do? Why do I need to get a 6 when there's a 7? I'll get one in the fall.
Well, what's interesting, too, and what people are reading into Apple, so is it... They're competitors to Apple now. It's not a brand new introduction. Other companies, particularly Chinese companies, are looking at that iPhone and are replicating something similar to that. And so one of the things about
Isn't that funny? I wonder how that happened. But
I can't imagine.
Yeah, but Samsung, but the other issue here is Samsung. Samsung's got a phone that you can put in a food processor and it's fine. Right? I mean, it's like that. I mean, that's the one problem that Apple has yet to figure out is that they are just still a little bit ginger.
Cracked the screen 2 days ago.
Yeah.
On this one.
See?
Oh,
I don't know how.
See, that happens. Well, but for them, that's good because then you have to replace the screen. But we are seeing new technologies launch. Some of these haven't really taken off, but, you know, we have technology where you can dip your iPhone or Samsung phone into a substance that makes it waterproof. And so you ostensibly could go swimming with it. And it is, you know, we are seeing technologies. Ro, you tend to drop things, so I'm not really sure that there's any phone that's going to be perfect for you.
Literally and figuratively. Hey, I want to ask you this, though. There's all this talk about the Eurozone having sort of a remarkable little pop here that was unexpected. So that and we're talking about just basically the manufacturing output, revenue for companies there. What is that all about?
Well, it was unexpected, and I think it's a really positive sign for Europe. So about a month ago, we heard the president of the European Community Bank, that's the ECB, Mario Draghi, came out and spoke, and he talked about how he was really prepared, once again, to support Europe. They were going to dedicate whatever funds necessary to help stimulate that economy. And that's because Europe has seemed to be kind of sliding back into a lull and not really coming out of their recession. We saw a lot of manufacturing just slowdowns there. And so people were getting a little bit nervous about it. We did see better data out of Europe, and that was a surprise. And I think that is typical of the market. I think we overshot in our downside on Europe. There are a lot of consumers in Europe. Remember, as the dollar strengthens, then that's sometimes bad for consumers. The dollar's been weakening. The euro's been strengthening. That's good for the European consumer. So we've seen a little bit of a shift in currency. We've seen a shift in, I think, sentiment. I think European sentiment, consumer sentiment is on the way up. That's positive, and that means they feel better about spending. Alternatively, today we saw a slight downtick in U.S. consumer sentiment. So, you know, trade-offs, it's a seesaw. I think that pop, just as we've seen before, I think Europe's maybe showing signs of life and a little more positive than people gave it credit for.
All right, Susan Schmidt, hold on 1 second, okay? Because I want to ask you about this expression. Ready? I'm going to throw something at you here.
Okay.
Sell in May and go away.
Yeah.
Sell in May and go away. Don't answer yet. Hold on. We have to.
Okay.
If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl.
There she is, Susan Schmidt from Westwood in Dallas, and she is. She's the host. She's the centerpiece of the managing.
Oh, my.
Yeah. How do you like that? Centerpiece. You're a centerpiece.
I like that.
Managing Your Future with Susan Schmidt, brought to you by DeVry University's Keller Graduate School of Management. All right. Now, let me say this. This expression, does this mean anything to you? Sell in May and go away.
Yes. So, and we frequently hear it right before May. So it's not surprising that it came up. And interestingly, it's a well-known expression in the market, sell in May, go away. People used to assume that was because May is the advent of summer. People leave New York. They're taking time off. They're vacationing. They're going away with their kids. And so the market is not as active. Therefore, just don't bother with it. And come back in really October, November, because then people are re-engaged and the market's back on. So it was interesting because in 2012, someone actually did a study on this, and they looked at the time frames across 37 different markets from May to October and then November to April. And they found that if you were in the market between November and April consistently every year and out of the market between May and October, you actually did much better than being in the market full time. So there is something.
So it's about as useful as Groundhog Day. We're going to get six more weeks of winter anyway. Usually, actually, 12 more weeks.
So exactly. So there is something to it, I guess, with this. This paper did substantiate it a little bit. But I would say that I think this is really more of an anomaly and probably a function of the fact that most companies have a fiscal year end that is December. So there's a lot of activity when annual guidance is given and companies really announce their broad-based strategy, which tends to happen in that winter time frame. And so that's, I think, perhaps what you're seeing there on that pickup. I don't recommend it. I think it's good to have exposure all the time, but it is, I think particularly when people want to go on vacation in my industry, they toss that out. And I think they're hoping their boss is going to turn around and say, yeah, just take the summer off.
Yeah, go ahead. Don't worry about it. Nothing important happens here. There won't be any, news made over the summer. That's fine. That's the crazy part of this, too. I mean, we now live in a 24/7, 365 world of the markets, right? Because there's a market open somewhere every day of the year.
Exactly. It's increasingly global. I'm getting texts at 2 a.m. telling me how, you know, the Asian markets are doing and what's going on. And so it is a 24/7 information flow, and technology has really advanced us to the point where you either love it or you hate it, but you can't escape market information because it's flowing at you constantly should you want to be receiving it. And I think that is very different than, you know, sell in May is a phrase that's been around for decades. And I think in today's market, it's probably a little less likely. When you think about it, we typically have a really big event, some sort of headline shocks the market at the end of summer, and it's happened for the past 4 or 5 years. So I wouldn't want to be ignoring the market then. I'd want to be tuned in.
Do you miss the days? I'm just going to ask you this. Do you miss the days, as I do, when men with stove pipe hats and middle inning reliever beards would walk down to the corner of Broad and Wall and stand there, go in the doors, and then they would stand in front of blackboards and write the prices of the stocks on and scream at each other and then go to lunch at noon. Do you miss that?
It does have a certain romantic charm to it.
Yes, it does have that idea, yes. Or even the Mad Men era where there was like a ticker and the thing was going across.
And everybody was leaving to have like a 5-scotch lunch or something.
Yes.
In a Don Draper suit.
Yeah. Exactly. Well,
Trading Places where they're cornering the orange juice market. Remember that?
Right.
Brothers.
So, yeah, I'm not really seeing that in the market these days. And it would be nice to have that because I think the big difference from those times versus what we have now, with this constant flow of information, it makes people very short-term focused. So remember that the guys with the stovepipe hats and anyone trying to corner the orange juice market was really thinking about it for a longer-term period and making an investment over time. And so I think that with this advent of technology and this constant news flow, there's a propensity to feel like you have to react all the time. I just got a piece of new information. I better react. Sometimes it's best just not to do anything.
That's what I've been saying for years. No one seems to listen to me. No can do, Winthorpe. No can do. All right. Susan Schmidt, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
My pleasure.
All right. Goodbye. All right. We'll see. We'll talk to her next week for sure. I like it when she comes in. Actually, the last time she was in was the day that the Trump rally got blowed up here. Ooh. And you were there. And she was there. She sat here watching. She stayed through the Carnival wagon. She was like, I can't believe what I'm looking at.
She ordered a pizza?
Yeah, it was pretty insane. All right, we have got Kim Gordon's news coming your way in about 2 minutes. And then the guy who invented Donald Trump, essentially, Roger Stone, is going to join us. And Trump had to run away, run into and run away from his own rally today. We'll explain.